Taxpayer MP. I've been asked to chair this committee, this session, because unfortunately Peter Fisher, who was bound to chair this, has had a family issue arise and therefore couldn't be here today. So can we send our best wishes to Peter and his family? I've got a couple of announcements to make. What we're going to do with this session, we've got an hour until 4 o'clock. We've then got a couple of announcements I'm going to call specific people. We've then got two short clip videos for you to see before Harry Keane sums up conflict. you'll have to excuse me if I get some of this wrong, but I've been trying to get my head around the questions. Believe you me, I'm the doctor's writing the bad until I read some of these questions. Then we have a problem trying to understand. But anyway, we think we picked the best of the bunch. I'm sorry if there's a hesitation. We have a distinguished panel of speakers. I'm going to try very hard not to make this like question time, so I'm not going to take advantage of my position and say what I think about the panellists, but I'm going to ask them to introduce themselves, if they would, please.
I'm John Mister, I'm from London Health Emergency and keeper of NHS Public.
Okay, the first question is actually for the whole of the conference, and it's from Shelley Wilson, and it says, does anyone have a wording for a Freedom of Information request that produces to produce locally on any qualified provider? So if you can just say who you are and where you are, and anybody that's got an answer to your question can meet them after. Are you in the hall, Shelley? Wave at me. Okay, we're not going to answer that. Right. Now, not all the panellists are going to have been required to answer every question, and after each question I'm going to take two or three speakers from the hall, and I'm going to be assisted by the people holding the microphones, because it's incredibly difficult from here to quickly pick people out because we've got these blue lights in our eyes. So I'm going to be helping them do one from the left, one from the right, and so on. Okay, first question. This is from Lucy Alessio, and it says, how do we stop the campaign to save the NHS becoming diluted by a more general campaign about the economy, budget cuts, unemployment, and so on? So, David, I'm going to sling you in the deep end. What do you want to
do? Well, firstly, I wouldn't see the risk as being dilution. I think the whole point of the NHS is that it matters to every single one of us, and lots of us will have slightly different ways in which we approach why we're campaigning about it, and I think we should embrace those different ways. So if people are coming at it from a more general critique of government economic policy, that's great. If they're coming at it from the point of view of protecting their local services because they rely on them, that's great as well. I think there's room for everyone.
I think it is important to keep the sort of thrust of Keep Our NHS Public and keeping health focused, but that doesn't mean you can't sit on platforms with other people and talk about the health service at the same time as they're talking about other kinds of cuts and things. So I think we need to keep a focus amongst ourselves, but we need to be working with other people to take part in this whole general struggle, which is an ideological one, as we all know.
I don't think it's a problem at all. I think anybody campaigning about anything that in terms of cuts or the economy or the austerity regime would think the NHS is the great winner. this is the one that really leaves open what the government's up to and what the whole thing's about. The reason why it was rushed forward in such a hurry, so politically recklessly, was because it is the template for what's happening to all public services. If you can do it with the NHS, you can do it with anything. And the public services white paper actually says that. And yet, I think politically it's entirely insane, because I think this is the issue that's going to bring the government down. For a whole number of years. And we've already seen how within a year, as the doctor mentioned, the British social attitudes have shown how public opinion has formed from it. Labour had it at its very, very height, but never been a higher satisfaction rating for the NHS. And all of the pollsters found that. Plummeting down in 1 year is not because the NHS has yet in 1 year deteriorated. It's because people have understood the argument. They know where it's going. They're very angry. They're very upset. And the point is, what's so insane about it? They've not only heard campaigners protesting about it, and the arguments even in the House of Lords about it. They've heard the government itself saying, Cameron saying, this is a second-class service and our cancer and heart rate results are much worse than other countries. And the government itself has been tearing down the reputation of the NHS, and now they're getting it back in place. When it comes to these local hospital closures, I've heard about North West London, a lot more around the place, that is going to be absolutely toxic. And when it comes to the rise in the fact that people get it, that all foundation trusts can put out up to 49% of their services to private patients, I thought I liked the blood donor suggestion earlier, that's going to seem really shocking as waiting lists rise. I mean, as campaigns go, I don't think anybody could be gifted better material by any government for its own self-destruction.
Well, I've got two parts of answers to this. The first off is I want to flag up something people might not have thought about, which is, I think it was about a week ago, George Osborne announced it was upwards of £100 million, as much as £140 billion. They're going to be paid to the banks to lend to private industry to try to kickstart the economy that's flatlining after failed treatment by George Osborne. And what interested me about this was, of course, we are now facing, as Polly's just alluded to, a barrage of cuts to actually recoup £20 billion of so-called efficiency savings. We're facing now hospital closures, A&E closures, cutbacks, job losses, and a downscaling of NHS treatment right across the country to try to save £20 billion. So there's a little bit of advice. You know, this does link up, okay? This does link up. Because if you really want to kickstart the economy, spend that £20 billion on the NHS, and while you're about it, restore the cuts in local government, and restore the cuts in social security and other benefits, and actually put some money in the pockets of people who are going to spend it, and that will get the economy started. The second, and this rather underlines what the government actually about. It's nothing at all about restoring the economy, it's about smashing the public sector. But the second point is the reason we can keep an identity for health campaigning even with this is because there's some very specific things that the health campaigners can do and should be doing in every area. This is not just a reliance on national campaigning and national campaigns. We need to be piling on pressure on local health and wellbeing boards to actually open up and become a genuine platform for people to express views and their concerns about what's going on. We need to pile pressure onto health and scrutiny committees, which are still there and still have statutory powers, to stop some of these closures and delay them and hold everything back. We need to pile pressure on the new clinical commissioning groups, and the GPs are going to be part of them, to step in and stop these PCTs massacring our NHS before they clear off next April and leave the problem behind them for the GPs to clear up. So we need some very specific campaigning on local issues that are specifically health that should keep people pretty busy. And if they can then find time for other things as well, that's great by me, and the more we can build a unity of purpose, the more we can defend the entire public sector against this vicious government.
Does anyone want to comment from the floor? often go. Right, Sarah, hand mic back now, yes please.
With the benefit of having Polly join me to speak to, which I'm really grateful for, because I think you're great and I read a lot of what you bring to the program. I was very disappointed with the show of the press in the run-up to the passing of the Health and Social Care Act. Along with a lot of other people were writing letters to to various papers and to the journals, medical journals, and trying to kind of galvanise press support for what was clearly a national issue and something that was very swiftly relegated to a party political issue. And I think it undermined the whole movement as soon as we were accused of being liars and vested interest, trade unionists, etc.
Can you come to a question, please?
The question is, does Polly have any feeling about why the press were so slack in coming forward to support what is clearly a very important national issue?
Especially the BBC.
Well, no, I don't think it's Leveson. I mean, first of all, you have to remember that 80% of this of the press in this country is Tory, and not just Tory, not just ordinary Tory, not any other Tory, but owned by very extreme ideological, eccentric, maverick billionaires, and so you're always up against that. You've got a BBC that's under immense political pressure. I mean, the leaning is so hard and the bullying so hard, and I don't think they did stand up to it well enough on the NHS. I mean, having been the BBC social affairs editor during the period, in fact, of the last of the Thatcher Ken Clark reforms, I know how incredibly difficult it is. The huge amount of noise you get before every news bulletin, after every news bulletin, by the spin doctors and the ministers, phoning up the newsroom, complaining even about the running order of items. I mean, the pressure is unrelenting, and it takes a terrific toughness to stand up against it. The BBC genuinely wants to be unbiased, but it's very difficult to know how to be unbiased and how far to go. Also, the other problem about this bill, as you will have found, but it's no longer really going to be the case as the reality dawns on people. What, up until now, what's been happening is it's been difficult to explain in one or two sentences what the bill really does. That it's very political to say this is a bill that privatises the NHS. We know it's true, but it's not something the BBC can just say in shorthand. So it says this is the bill that's going to hand the NHS over to GPs. Well, that was a very clever PR line, and as Claire has made quite clear, it's not quite the way GPs see it. I think it has been hard to explain. It is very complicated. As some people have said earlier, part of the difficulty in this campaigning is going to be explaining what the bill does. But actually, we've got sort of through that phase now. Now people are going to see what happens on the ground, and the cuts will be conflated with the effect of the bill, of the Act, and a huge amount of closures, reconfigurations, long waiting lists, trolleys back in A&E, all of that makes the story, makes the case for itself. But, the press in this country is appalling. The Guardian, I think, did pretty well. We kept at it. The Guardian has a whole dedicated health site that has a huge amount of information all the time, reporting in detail of each conference and everything that's being said and done. It's difficult. We don't have many readers. We're falling off a cliff along with all the rest of the newspapers. Keep buying us.
And then we're going to move on.
Well, just to say, from my experience, I would like to say that Polly is absolutely right. And throughout my experience of being invited to give my touch's worth on the media, it was very rarely was it balanced by someone else with the same views. We always had to clearly balance it with someone with completely different views, even though that was they were in the minority. And I was told at one point when a journalist, because I don't think it was the journalist to be honest, when a journalist invited me to do a programme, which I did, and then the journalist inadvertently slipped and told me that this particular person, this journalist, had had their knuckles wrapped by a very senior level for inviting me onto the programme. Now, I have it on good authority that that was correct, so I learned a phenomenal amount, but I also learned that it's that we make our own media, and actually what I have learned since is we use social media, we use Twitter, we use the bottom of articles. I mean, after in any article there's sometimes up to 300 or 400 comments at the end of it. And we use our own systems, and in fact the journalists are changing. I don't know whether, you know, the Daily Telegraph has had some very, very good articles. Max Pemberton, excellent articles. The Mail on Sunday has had some superb articles about what's going on. They're trying to take a bash at GP, so at every point, but, you know, if you can ignore that. There's some very good articles. So I think, whilst I think there are some establishment journalists who don't say things, I think, as they should, I think it is changing. So I don't think it is all as nihilistic as we think it is, and I think there's every single optimism that as Polly says and the others have said, these changes start to pan out into the disaster that we know they're going to be, I think we'll find they will be reported increasingly by all of our media.
Can I add that, of course, she's right, because the interesting thing is that these are going to be such dramatic stories, and all the newspapers love health disaster stories. But in fact, I do think that the Mail and the Telegraph and all the rest will find themselves reporting, you know, huge, dreadful things going on. They'll just find it irresistible despite the politics. I think she's right.
Okay, we're moving on now. There are a question from Richard Grimes, which says, how effective do you think it is for activists to defend the NHS from within as foundation trust governors or as patient representatives? John?
I think this is something that, and if you'd asked me about this 9 months ago, I'd have said we want to stay clear of foundation trusts, we want to fight the setting up of foundation trusts and so on. But it clearly is now going to be a main feature of the landscape. And what is significant to me is that to expand the private sector provision up towards the 49% that they're now allowed to, they have to get the consent of the Board of Governors. This makes it an issue now where there's actually something really useful that can be done in becoming a governor, joining the Foundation Trust and becoming a governor. Now, what I don't suggest is that individuals just saunter around doing this. What you want to do is get organised, because what you don't want to be is an isolated voice stuck in a body of servile people who are just there for the bolivants and the free cups of tea. So I think what you actually want to do is to make a campaign in each local area, find out when the elections are to the Board of Governors, and have a real push. Because if we can get Boards of Governors at least making a debate out of it, forcing it into the press, making it a talking point locally, it'll become much, much harder for Rodney's Foundation Trust to move down the line of prioritising private patients over NHS patients. And that really is something worth fighting for, and that's another area of intervention that, as I say, it's a new one, it's a specific one, and it could be actually quite fruitful in also smoking out information as to what's actually happening in Foundation Trusts, which currently, very largely, don't publish as much information as NHS Trusts do, and so another way of getting that information out, sharing it, and using it as a basis to build local campaigning.
Yes, I think that one should do as John suggests. I do know that there's an NHS Consultants Association member, retired physician, who got ejected from his foundation trust because he asked awkward questions, and he's pursuing that vigorously in the press. So I think John is absolutely right that you need to get a group of you to apply so that there is some support, and have a group that will support you outside of the hospital. I mean, anybody can become a member of a foundation trust. I've never got around to doing that. And from those members are selected the board members. So it's worthwhile doing it. And I think one of the things that the media took absolutely no notice of the original bit in the bill which would have allowed foundation trusts to have no cap on their income from private patients. And that was the one thing that Shirley Williams did succeed in doing, which was to get it reduced to 49%, which is of course far too high, but at least it's not 100%. But the media didn't pick that up until they had this figure of 49% and they could think about it. They could apparently think about it in the abstract when it was there was no to be no cap at all. And I was just thinking when John was speaking that Jackie this morning mentioned that the media had been very unhelpful in the investigative journalism. But Tamsin Cave from Spinwatch has done some really good stuff, which we've got on our website. And I think what she meant was the major media, the sort of well-established media with salaries and things like this. But small groups of people have been doing really good work looking at what's going on. And Tamsin is one of them.
I'm going to take a slight liberty at this point because I know one of the things that Wendy wanted to talk about are the ways of patients to get involved with their individual doctors over this, and I'm wonderful to just talk about postcards.
All right. Well, I don't know that the comp people will have had one of these postcards in their packs this morning or on their seats, but we put some at the front of the hall here for everyone to take at least one home. Maybe two if you, or somebody now looks like they're going to pass them around, aren't they? Anyhow, this is a postcard which has quite a long history really. Alex Scott Samuel from Merseyside, Kibo NHS Public, suggested this some time ago. On the steering group we were a bit worried about it because we thought it was putting pressure on patients. And then Sam Samoff from Merseyside worked on it, on the wording, and then it came to the steering group and people made other suggestions, and then Shirley McGrath, a bundle of energy at 80 years old, got it going with Mike Hart from Hackney, Keep Our Age Public. We've got 10,000 of them printed for a postcard, and then they are for you to give to your GP saying, I do not want to be referred to a private company for my healthcare, and would you put a NPP on my notes, no private companies. So we think this could be a really good tool, and we'll be printing another 10,000. I haven't worked out the exact price yet for you to buy larger quantities, but you can have one free.
David. So Richard's question was how effective do we think it will be to join the patient participation group. So I think part of the actual moment is we and foundation trust governors. And I think the honest answer is we don't know yet. That we are moving into kind of quite uncharted territory with the new NHS structures. It's a mess, everyone knows it's a mess. And as activists, as campaigners, we're going to have to try loads of things and experiment. And I think what's going to be very important is that as we're experimenting, as we're trying stuff, we're talking to each other, we're networking, so that as we discover what works, we're feeding it back and we're learning about it. I mean, a big example of what's happening in Stroud is a really good example of that. But the innovation, the ideas are coming up at a local level. But the critical thing is that people, when they do that, as Stroud done, then turn up at conferences like this and share it. They get online and they put their information available. And in the same way, people who are getting involved with those local structures, people like 38 Degrees and Keep Our NHS Public, need to be thinking really hard about how we can network those people. And if you get involved in this, it's make sure you're talking to us, make sure you're telling people what you're doing, because some things will work and some won't, and some of the things that work, we probably won't expect to be the things that work, but it's really important you find out what does.
Okay,
I just want to share with you what I thought worked during the health and social care debate. What worked was when people, particular doctors, started writing to their own colleges. And I think for me, sitting right in the middle of this maelstrom, that was for me the tipping point when actually the profession started lobbying their own. And I think whilst it's important that you do send these postcards to GPs, I'm not sure with the best will in the world it's going to shift very much. It will raise awareness, but for example, I don't know whether you know that the majority of your blood tests are done privately. Well, you can't opt out of that because, you know, in fact, we don't even know who's doing them. So, but where I think you can have an influence, a major influence, is to write to the national bodies, in particular the BMA. They've got a new leader starting this week, and I think you could avalanche the new leader, whoever that is, yet again with concerns to show that nothing's gone away. I think you need to be avalanching us, medical profession, again with your concerns and saying that you think what's going on is disgraceful, etc., etc., etc. So by all means, send these to your GPs, but I've got a conflict of interest here. I'm a GP. GPs are heaving under the workload at the moment, absolutely heaving, and I am so concerned about my profession. In the paper yesterday, we're saying that CCG GP leads will be sacked if they ration care. Well, what on earth are they meant to be doing? That's what Lansley has told them to do, and now they're being told they're going to be sacked. And I think my profession need your support. I think you'll find the vast majority of my profession, I've got some GPs in the audience, do not like these reforms, in fact, are just terrified of them. So just be supportive of them, but use your voice where I think it's going to be maximum effect. Write to the BMA, new leader network, I don't know who it is, be announced on Thursday, and just get moving on that tack.
Slightly, David Dimbleby, you just feel terribly pressured and you want to have time to expand for everybody to say things. Yes, would you like a comment from the floor? Can you try and restrict your comments to the question rather than your personal experience and description of the campaign?
Yes. I think we've had a lot of very interesting information about direct action.
Could you put it closer to your mouth, please?
We've had a lot of useful information on potential direct action, how to react to the new regime. But then the paramount thing that we're certainly going to need a legislative programme, and therefore fundamentally, unless we get the Labour Party on board for a coherent legislative change, we're never going to sort this out.
It's a woman here.
Yes. You said yes, please.
Okay. Here.
Yeah.
Talking of getting a long-time campaigner. Talking of getting it out to the public, I have a letter here from Simon Burns. For anybody who doesn't know him, he's the sidekick of Lansley. The question that I asked him, incidentally, the government did not turn up at the Pensioners' Parliament to answer this question. And the question was, given that it was never discussed, the risk register in both houses, that was the thrust of the question. Now I'm giving you some right. Mr. Burns' answer, I will go into the letter. You can have copies of these. It's authentic. It's in council. It's in the public domain, and he states the reason that we didn't get the risk register. Civil servants must be free to think the unthinkable and record potential risks and mitigations fully, frankly, and with absolute candor. Confidence in the knowledge that this information will not be publicly disclosed. These arguments were put to the Information Tribunal in this matter. And now the department is considering its response to the tribunal's recent decision. Now, this is not over because Mr. Simon Burns is still trying to answer it. You're very welcome to print this in your paper. I have the full permission of the MP to work with it, but it's in Hansard, and I have half a dozen copies with me. Anybody that would like them, thank you very much, because I've tried all of it.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Jackie Everly. I'm a GP from Tower Hamlets, and I don't think we should restrict ourselves to one method of campaigning. I think we should be doing it all. I mean, people here might feel confident to write letters to institutions, but others need to be led. And I'm a GP, and I'll be having these in my surgery. And I think we need to campaign in public. What we do needs to be public. People need to know what we're doing. We can write to an institution. And you can largely be ignored because nobody else knows that you've done it. And I'm a BMA member, and I can assure you that lobbying for our leadership to call for withdrawal of the bill was an uphill struggle. So good luck if you write to them.
Yeah, someone's pointing at their head. Thanks.
I'm Tad Pabu. I'm a community pediatrician in Southwark. I'm really glad I gave up my Saturday to come here today because I have learned so much. As a doctor who's worked in the health service, I just knew I'm shocked about what's going to happen in the health service. And I'm the BMA rep for our department, you know. And I didn't know any of this, you know. I mean, I knew that there was going to be cuts, etc. But actually, what's actually happening out there, you know? Last week, I went to a meeting, you know, and there was something about Virgin Healthcare having a huge contract in Southeast England. So, you know, it's all happening out there, and as somebody who's working in the health service, I was ignorant of this. So there's a massive, massive amount of information that people haven't got out there, members of the public and professionals. So, you know, I mean, how can we really accelerate the campaign, basically, because we haven't got much time.
Hi, I'm James Beecher again, but I'm taking off any hat that I'm supposed to be wearing. I'm speaking as an individual now. I'm a bit concerned about people talking about legislation and the Labour Party, because I don't want to have to wait till 2015. Mm. I don't think we've got that time. It's true that we should be campaigning on all fronts and doing what we can, but all of us are pressured in our lives and all of us have got other things that we need to do, so we need to be selective in some senses. And I'm very concerned about a lot of this, let's write letters to these people and let's appear on these boards and stuff. I think if that's what certain people are good at doing, they should do it and they should do it well, great. But for a lot of us, it's you have to get your head around a lot of things, it takes a lot of time. What we need to do is to put the private companies off the NHS. They know there's millions and billions of pounds coming in. And unless we somehow make it unattractive for them to come and take these services and make money out of them, they're going to keep coming. It might not be through the ways the Tories have done it this time. They'll figure out a way to get in there somehow. So we just have to make it, we have to cost them money. You know, the one campaign that's been successful recently is Boycott Workfare, right? They get in the shops, they make it financially unviable to be associated with this scheme anymore. We have to be going to Virgin and Serco and making it absolutely impossible for them to continue to be going after these services. And I'm, you know, we have to start thinking, this is our NHS, this is people getting cared for, right? I said this, don't take extra legal action rather than just legal action. Seriously, you know, a lot of people in this room will not be used to breaking the law or taking that kind of action. We have to seriously consider that when you think about what is being done. Think about it, it's not writing letters anymore, but writing petitions. The bill went through, we've got to step up what we're going to do about this.
Having been involved with a lot of the UK Uncut actions, I think you're absolutely dead right, that reputational damage is where it is. I think it's harder to get companies like Serco because their whole business is outsourcing public service and they've got rhinoceros hides. But just as a thought experiment, how many people in this room have ever used any Virgin product or given Richard Branson any money in any shape or form? So far, if you can knock Virgin out of healthcare, that will be such a win. in the same way that knocking Tesco out of workfare was, because Tesco ended up then saying we'll pay everybody the minimum wage and we'll give them a guaranteed job at the end of a permanent job at the end of 6 weeks. And that was fantastic. It made things much better. So I think Virgin is the one to go for. As for the risk register question...
Plus Sainsbury.
Sainsbury's doing healthcare. I mean, it's up to yourselves if you go to Virgin, Sainsbury's, Tesco. I just think, I think the message is right around it's got to be simple because actually this whole bill is complicated. And I just want to pick up on your comment about not understanding, even though you're the BMA rep. And this goes back to this postcard. We all, to a certain extent, have an inbuilt knowledge of this because we've lived it and breathed it and smelt it for 18 months and before with all the other reforms that went through. But if you go and ask even the average GP, even a GP on a CCG, their knowledge of what they're being asked to do is pretty minimal. And if you ask them way below that and start to ask the GP in the consulting room in Shropshire or whatever, it's pretty minimal, let alone other doctors outside general practice. And during last year, what I learned was the unbelievable lack of knowledge and understanding at the most senior level in the vast majority wherever I was mixing. Even politicians didn't know what this bill meant. So actually we came up with some very simple, I think I stole it from somebody, but probably yourselves, it's taking the N out of NHS. We've just got to have very simple messages so the public understand and forget all the, we got lost in the removing clause 1, duty to provide versus duty to promote a comprehensive health service by law 2.310, and what does that mean? It's got to be fundamental, simple, and then we have debates about what the private sector is, which is what that leads to. And then I get thrown at me, but GPs are private. So then I throw that back and I say GPs have the NHS like DNA, like a stick of rock through them. It's DNA through them. We just happen to work in a different way, blah, 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 blah. So we need absolute responses to all this rubbish that is thrown at us repeatedly so that we get a definition and we understand what we're fighting for, because otherwise we'll be taken apart as, several times people have been taken apart. So it's just my tuppence worth. We have to know the message, keep the message simple, understand your facts, but never assume that anybody has any information or knowledge about what you instinctively know because you spent the time just doing and reading. What I'm pushing for GPs at the moment is the rationing, and any of you that follow me on Twitter, I am pushing to them to say GPs have no right rationing care any more than my bus driver does. That is what MPs do on our behalf. They determine what can be funded in a publicly funded health service. Doctors prioritise then according to need. And this is what I'm pushing and pushing and pushing, because my GP colleagues are coming up to me and saying, well, what do you think I shouldn't fund if I'm funding X or Y? And that is none of your business. You prioritise according to need. So these are the messages.
Just to clarify, Sainsbury's have gone into the pharmacy business in St Thomas's Hospital and in King's. And that's one of the things I learned today that I didn't know. They've taken over the pharmacy.
Who writes?
They are the preferred bidder for inpatient pharmacy services and guides at St Thomas's Hospital. But just to add, the union branch, the United branch, at guides at St Thomas's have started a campaign of dragging Sainsbury's name through the mud. We've got a demonstration, it's the third demonstration, outside Sainsbury's in Borough High Street, this Wednesday, between 12 and 2. We want to take the lead out of the people that were doing the direct action, civil disobedience, anything it takes to keep those greedy corporate bastards off of our health service.
Link. between the postcards, which can be seen right at the bottom here, of individual patients informing their GP of their preference not to be referred to the private sector. I agree that in some cases that's going to be impossible, where there is no other provider but...
Stop.
I'm sorry, I keep stopping present.
Turning in his grave.
This is a roundly locked chair. I was trying to make the link between the postcard that is an individual choice, because if GPs get enough of these postcards, then they will be aware of what the feeling of their patient population is. Practice is a member of a CCG. And so if there's enough groundswell of opposition, plus, as Claire has said, GPs are going to hate to ration care. They're going to absolutely hate it. So they're going to be very pleased if there are people around, patients around, who are saying, we don't want this. And gradually that opinion may filter up to the CCG. So I think there is a link between the postcard, if you like, right at the bottom, and what we have to do in terms of lobbying and picketing, perhaps, CCGs. Okay, I'm going to move on. This is Bruce Marks.
Yes, I'm Marks. I know that it's a long time for the next election, or maybe it won't be so long, but I do think we have got to work on the Labour Party. We've got to be realistic about this. We've got three major parties, and the Greens are the only party who share our feelings about the NHS. But the Greens are not going to get into Parliament. And so we've got to work on the Labour Party, because that's the only one that there is a chance could reverse this legislation if they got in.
What about the socialists?
Oh, right. What about the socialists?
So what I would like to say to people who are still members of the Labour Party, I did resign in 1999, but I rejoined because I thought the alternative was worse, and it is. And I have got a motion that we got through the Islington South and Finsbury constituency Labour Party, asking the Labour Party to reaffirm its 1997 manifesto commitment, which was to restore the NHS as a cooperative organisation. And anyone who would like to have that, just write to the top office and I will give it to you, and you can try and get it through your CLP. I mean, what the hell happens to it after that, I haven't yet discovered. I'm going to go to the Labour Party in Parliament this year.
I understand that people have very, very different views about this, and all I can say is that the Labour Party did not help itself by starting the privatisation. Other than to campaign to get the Labour Party to come out fully and squarely behind the NHS as we want to see it. We have to do that. But we have to do it not just by resolution mongering, as it's called. We have to do it by getting out there and making it impossible for the Labour Party to ignore us. You deserve my roller's chest. Right, here we go. A letter from... Question from Mike Wood. What process do we need to begin to build a national link-up of NHS campaign groups?
This is a big ask, and every time we have a movement, and I've been around doing this work for 28 years now, and I've seen a few people suggesting national link-ups before. And people mean it, and everybody thinks it would be a good idea. It's actually very hard to do, because what we need is sufficient local groups with enough weight and enough substantial energy behind them to then be able to allocate a little bit of their resources to building a national body. So my urge to you, and you know, my overwhelming message is, the starting point of fighting all of this and making this act unworkable is local. The starting point is really getting stuck in to your local patch. The people you start talking to in your workplace, in your local area, your neighbours and whatever, they are going to first and foremost relate to their local hospitals, their local services, things they understand. bit by bit as we build up an awareness of what's taking place and how it fits into the bigger scheme of things. And we do try to work that in. Bit by bit, hopefully we can create strong enough organisations they can start to link up. But I really think the start to build a national structure and then hope we can fill it up later with local groups is not the way around. And I really think time is running out. We have 9 months to block this bill. 9 months. Next April, the PCTs are scrapped. Next April, the Strategic Health Authorities are scrapped. Next April, a lot of these other things happen. And I think we have so many tasks to take on to build resistance, to try to block these and obstruct them and hold them up. Some of these cuts we've been talking about, the North West London cuts, they want to start doing them in December this year. Right? We have a countdown for local action. Let's make sure every substantial town and city across England has a campaign group up and running, whether it's called Keep Our NHS Public or whatever it's called, that links up around cuts and privatisation. Let's build the basis for a national organisation that will continue that fight, but let's prioritise the fight between now and next April to actually block and obstruct this bill in every way we possibly can.
Okay, this is the last 10 minutes, the hurry-up stage, so David, hurry up.
I actually think that there are a number of great organisations working nationally, and they are linked up, and they are talking to each other, and this is people linking up nationally to share things. I don't think one umbrella, rigid organisation would help, because if you look at why things didn't go better when we were campaigning against the Health and Social Care Act, one of the big problems, I think, is we peaked too late. We got the campaign going too late. Now, big, clunky national structures are not famous for making things move more quickly. Another problem was that organisations that should have been in a different place and against the Act either weren't or were there too late. Again, a national, some kind of umbrella structure wouldn't have solved that. They would have just either been inside that structure obstructing it doing anything, or they wouldn't have joined. So I think the focus needs to be, as John said, on getting stuck in locally, trying out different tactics, and campaigning against the changes that we don't want and for the NHS we want to see, rather than getting lost in conversations about structures and bureaucracy. We've got people and we've got the public on our side, and that's what we should focus on.
Well, I'm really here to hear about campaigning, and I hopefully to report on it. I don't feel I'm an expert on this, but I'm delighted to hear about how well it's going. My instinct is that on reporting it, you're absolutely right when you said the tragedy was, apart from Claire, the doctors didn't get their act together. If the BMA and the Royal Colleges had been there 6 months earlier, I think they might have won.
I'm Candice Boogle, I'm chair of Tower Hamlets and City of East London Local Medical Committee, which is one of the BMA's representative structures in Tower Hamlets, Keeper NHS Public. I think that the most important thing for taking this forward, as we heard from the platform this morning, the next big national event that we can all rally round with a national focus is the TUC demonstration on October the 20th. And I think where this links in with the plea from the platform now to build things locally is, I think in every single area, Keep Our NHS Public, trade union groups, everybody ought to be getting together to build local committees so that we can make sure that demonstration on October the 20th is the largest demonstration that we've seen for a very long time. We're certainly doing that in Tower Hamlets. We've got a date in the diary for sometime in early July where we're going to try and get everybody together so that we can start mobilising for it now, because soon people will be going away for their summer holidays, and we need to start building the groundwork now to make sure that demonstration is truly massive and that the NHS forms a core part of that public services demo.
Yes, hello. I'm Alex Hanley, signed from Lewisham, Keeper NHS Public. And two very quick key points. The first is on social media. 72 hours before Lansley turned up on Question Time last October, that was the question time he got a real hammering on, I got wind of it, and Lewisham KOMP called a picket of that Question Time. And within 72 hours, using social media, 150 people turned up to picket Lansley, and the deputy editor of the London Evening Standard mentioned that demo that night on the telly, which went out to millions of people. I nearly fell off my chair. And at the same time, people at the back making contributions about that demo. And my final contribution is this. Next Saturday is something called Netroots, which is taking part at TUC headquarters, but it's going to be a very lively, independent thing about using social media to build protest and political profile. Now, I'm going with this guy called Mike from Hackney and a teacher called Susanna from somewhere. I don't know where somewhere is, but you know what I'm talking about. And my question to you is, if you want to go, because Lewis and KOMP uses Twitter and Facebook, we don't use it always that much effectively as we could do, come and see me after this meeting, and we can go as a block, we can go in there, we can share ideas and learn quickly from each other, so we're not sat there trying to upload stuff on, you know, websites at 1 o'clock in the morning and trying to load, video or so on. We're not quite sure what we're doing half the time. So please come and see me after this meeting. Give me your details, and we can go as a block next weekend. It's only a fiver to go. Thank you.
We've got 4 minutes to go, and I do want to take this question because I think it's incredibly difficult to answer. It's from Monica Robb, and there's a recent report which highlighted the appalling state of our mental health services, which are due to have a further 25% cut. What can we do to improve funding? Now, I realise it's a difficult question, but I think it's this sort of nitty-gritty where we have to start thinking differently about some of the most difficult areas that even some of us campaigning people have tended to ignore. So, I don't know...
Well, I mean, you're absolutely right. It's dreadful what's happening to mental health. Absolutely dreadful. And with the rhetoric of no health without mental health and the fact that the government's saying, protect mental health. And one of the big problems, which again has happened under the last government, which is accelerating now, is the move of mental health services to the third sector, as well as the private sector. We all sit there and think, well, the third sector is nice and cuddly, Turning Point and all the other conflicts of interest. I work for Turning Point, so I'm saying that now. But what's happening is that because it's going, and it is going, to the lowest bid, because that's, if you were to buy something, any of you, you'd go for the cheapest, wouldn't you, if you had a limited cash envelope. What is actually... So I'm not saying it's a good thing, but that's what's happening. And actually what we're seeing now is an annihilation of NHS addiction services, and I predict in 5 years' time there will be no NHS addiction services. They will all be out to the third sector and the private sector, and we will rue the day, because the reason why we bat so far above our weight in services like addiction is because we have fantastic NHS addiction services that, because they see it coming through the door, like with the HIV issues, hepatitis C, even tetanus, and we had a mini tetanus problem in Brighton not so long ago, they can rapidly do research and rapidly find sources out and rapidly lead the way in research and development. And we are losing that, and we are blind to it. I bet all of you are blind to it, even though there was a very good article in The Guardian not so long ago. So this is stuff, folks, that even you, with your knowledge, have no idea is going on under your feet in your lifetime, here and now.
Okay. Apart from Claire speaking, this will be your last contribution, but I still wanted to be quite short, please. Oh.
This is our last contribution.
It is.
Well, I'm speaking up the Mental Health Trust, the mental health issue. My partner's on a very big mental health board, a very big mental health trust. The level of chaos, this is just one anecdote, one I happen to know, the level of chaos is that a whole London borough is now without any mental health service because they forgot to commission them. But in the process of handing over between PNR and Abetanol, but I'm sure it'll emerge, and it won't be the only case where the whole turbulent process of handing over from one system to another, quite apart from how disastrous the other is, a lot of things are going to get dropped along the way, and my bet is that mental health will very often be the thing that falls off the edge, all the cuts, the things that they've forgotten about. And, you know, the report this week said that, as it is, only 25% of people with serious mental health problems of one kind or another are actually getting any treatment at all. And if even that's going to be cut by another 20%, that's horrendous. Nevertheless, this is the last thing I'm going to say, and I'll say the same thing again. I am immensely optimistic that all of these things are going to emerge very soon. You know, in a year's time from now, the health will be at the very top of the agenda. And even if the economy appears to be picking up a bit, unemployment appears to be falling a bit, the crisis within the health service will absolutely dominate everything else. And there will be no escape, this government. They brought it on themselves, and although some of it will be cuts that would have happened anyway, hard times anyway, all of it will be laid at their door, and everybody will remember that David Cameron poster. It goes right home to him.
Inviting me to the people who organise this, because it's a real honour for me to come and to be slightly outside my comfort zone, and I support you so fundamentally and utterly, and any of you that want to contact me offline, very happy to take forward any issues that you might have, particularly around primary care.
I was a little bit nervous setting off for this conference this morning because I was a bit worried it might be a bit downbeat, but it might feel a bit like a wake. We have, after all, had a really disappointing campaign defeat recently. And it doesn't feel like that to me. I think we have to recognise that when a government of the day decides, with a parliamentary majority, decides they want to force something through, They kind of can, no matter what great campaign we do. We saw that with Iraq, we saw that with a few other things that the last government did as well. But what we also know is that they may be able to force it through Parliament, but that doesn't mean they can get away with it, and it doesn't mean they can implement it on the ground, and they can change society. This is what stopping them get away with that looks like. It's all of us working together in our different ways, sharing ideas and going back to wherever we live and making friends with other people who feel the same, which after all is the majority of people, so let's get going.
The question was, what can we do about the mental health services? And I think this is where one could try the health... the overview and scrutiny committees, because they do have statutory powers, unlike the Health and Wellbeing Board, which we've set up, but don't have any powers, any responsibilities. And I think that because people are so ignorant about mental health, that if you actually point out what this is going to mean for the community as a whole, you might get the Health and the Overview and Scrutiny Committee to raise objections to it and perhaps halt what they're trying to do.
All over the country, even if they're not already out, cuts packages are being drawn up, and they will be at the centre of events in the next period of time. And if you just look at the Northwest London, which has been referred to, the headline story that everybody will pick up on is 4 accident emergency units to close. Okay. The next story, which a lot of people pick up, is 5,700 jobs to close. But below the line of that is not just mental health. Mental health gets belted as well. And not just that, but community services, which allegedly is supposed to be where the people are not going to hospital are going to be looked after, they're being cut as well. So let's actually make sure in every piece of propaganda that we put out, material and information, that we bring in this dimension. Mental health should be absolutely at the centre of these concerns. They have suffered disproportionate cuts up and down, and it's because the news media easily focus on blue light ambulance and emergency services and hospitals that everybody knows and understands, and they find it easy to drop mental health out of the picture. As campaigners, we can find ways to stop that if we make sure we've got good information, we follow it ourselves, we build it into our campaigns, we keep it central. So let's pile that lobbying on, and let's punch all these buttons, let's go through all these committees. The Health and Wellbeing Boards, who knows what they might do, actually, if some councillors actually seriously got involved, some council leaders got involved, and we actually make it a platform in which some of these issues can be raised of general concern through a democratic body. Let's try and make that work. Let's try the health and scrutiny committees as well. Let's write to the CCGs and say, are you in favour of these cuts being driven through by PCTs who will not be here in April when this chaos breaks loose? They won't be here, they won't be picking up the tab, the GPs will. And actually the GPs really are the key to this. I know it's hard for the GPs to be in the middle of everything, but that's where they've been put, and we should be asking them, don't take responsibility for these kind of cuts. Don't take responsibility for this kind of shambles being unleashed by Annesley. Stop it now. Tell the PCTs to stop it now. Come out publicly and join the campaigns, and let's actually build up this bill in every way we can, and the cuts that go with it. Then we can build a campaign that will keep our NHS in one piece and keep it public.
Finish now and I'll explain why. That is that there are powers higher than me that have told me to stop at four. It's already nearly 4:05, and we do have some other bits of business, so that's the reason that the programme says 4:15, and I've just received a note to remind me of this, and that's the reason we're stopping early. Now, I've just had another whisper from the ether here on my right, which is that if you've got any juicy stories, then there is somebody on the panel who would be extremely glad to receive
them. My email is at the bottom of my column every week, and I'm the only person who answers it, so you can write in complete confidence to me. Okay.
Okay, well, that's a very good point to ask you to thank the people that have suffered your interrogation, and it's quite scary being up here, and I'm glad we've all survived. So thank you very much.